aboard, you people. It is another day. Another day of broadcast insolence and on the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, now, if you were not watching the news this morning, maybe you just get in your car and you missed all of the hysteria that happened in front of Rod Blagojevich's house. The now freed, formerly imprisoned governor of the state of Illinois. He was quite a spectacle. It was quite a moment. It was not like anything that we would have expected. But now we live in a very different media age. We live in a time in which anybody, especially people coming out of prison, can say they were wrongly accused, and this whole thing, the world was out to get them. And I, you know, it was very interesting. Was I heard on Anna's show earlier when Sam Adam was on, who was the lawyer who got Rod Blagojevich off in the first case. And he said, you know, when you're in prison, you're around a lot of guys who are all there getting in your ear, telling you that you got screwed because they got screwed because it's, you know, the man's out to get them. And this is, and nobody, everybody in there is innocent. Right. So that's how that goes. So he kept that up. But now I think it's more of a political tactic that is sort of well-worn. It doesn't matter what people do. It's the deep state, or it's the, you know, the government's out to get you. It's the, it's some conspiracy of all of these folks and whomever they may be. And you're going to hear, I believe, Rod Blagojevich saying that quite a bit now publicly, because it seems to be working a little bit for him. I think he's got a really great sense and instinct for these things. And I think he is going to realize he's hit on a note here. And if he can play this note for a period of time, he may become politically relevant, maybe never to be able to run for office again, because he can't in the state of Illinois. I mean, theoretically, he could run for Congress, potentially, but I think that would be, that somebody might try to stop that from happening, lawyers. But anyway, it's he's going to be in the political conversation, I think. And listen, if he wants to do justice reform, and there are real issues of justice reform, his does not count. And let me give you why it does not count. Let me just give you a little taste of what he said outside his house today.
The scriptures teach us, and history shows, that in the long run, right defeated will in the end overcome. The scriptures teach us, and history shows, that in the long run, right defeated will in the end overcome wrong triumphant. And as Dr. Martin Luther King used to say, truth crushed to earth will one day rise again, because no lie can live forever. I'm returning home today from a long exile, a freed political prisoner.
There you go. That's what he said. That's what he said. And he also said this little curious tidbit.
I got into politics to help people. I didn't get into politics to make money. I didn't get into politics to enrich my family or my friends. I got into politics because I was fortunate to live in the greatest country that's ever existed.
Well, we decided here at the Rokan Show, the Rokan Mighty Art Players, decided to put together a little something for you. And this is Rod Blagojevich in his own words. So you tell me if today's Rod Blagojevich really meets the 2008 Rod Blagojevich.
Yeah, we got the message. Grateful and appreciative, huh? I think a 501c4. Can we get his friend Warren Buffett or some of those guys to help us on something like that?
What, for you?
Yeah.
Do they think that I would just appoint Valerie Jarrett for nothing? Just to make him happy?
Hey, senators make $169,300.
So more than what I make. 169, huh?
Yeah, 169.3.
But, you know, what about Patty on some, you know, corporate boards? Paid corporate boards right now. Can they help us that way? Treehouse Foods, the one that, what's her name, was on for $65,000. Now, can we get Patty a couple of those? But if they feel like they can do this and not give me anything under just some vague assurances or something, then I'll go Jesse Jr. I mean, the arrogance of these people.
Yeah, what have I gotten for? Oh, the people are going to be mad and the newspapers will follow you.
Yeah. Didn't get in it for the money. Let's just put it this way. He didn't make the money in it, but it's not that he didn't try. All right. We'll come back. We've got Mr. Ben Bradley joining us because the media scrum last night at O'Hare was something to be seen. This is just one of those stories, man, that when you watch, it's the story about the media is almost as good as the story about the subject. So We'll talk to him about that. And then also this hour, Alderman Brendan Riley will be joining us after the bottom of the hour news. He is very well aware, big Chicago politician, very well aware of the impact of Rob Blagojevich and that trial on Chicago, and also some other non-Blagojevich news about whether or not Chicago is a little step sooner, a little step closer to getting a casino here. But first, Lauren Lapka's got the traffic and the weather.
One team keeping an eye on cigarettes. Lourdes Duarte follows city inspectors as they search for secret stashes. WGN-TV investigates tonight at 9. Rowan, Ben, you guys don't have any secret stashes of cigarettes, do you?
Not after we found out Lourdes was investigating.
Yes.
Lourdes shows up. You hide the cigarettes.
We're very afraid of her. Excuse me, people. Stand by. I want to play something for you.
I got into politics to help people. I didn't get into politics to make money. I didn't get into politics to enrich my family or my friends. I got into politics because I was fortunate to live in the greatest country that's ever existed.
Here's the immediate challenge. How do we take some of the financial pressure off of our family here? Okay? And then I have a personal issue, which is I feel like I'm f***ing my children. That's what I feel like. The whole world's passing me by. I'm stuck in this f***ing gridlock for two more f***ing years. Okay? And nasty f***ing press and everything, you know, and every f*** out there, you know, few friends, trying to do the right thing, you know, getting my kick to try to get stuff done, finding ways around them, creating more issues, as opposed to just sitting back. And then I'm going to have to, like, look the other way on a tax increase now. And in the meantime, are you
in the
kidding
meantime,
me?
Amy's
eight
going,
wasted years.
And Amy's
what?
Going to college in 6 years.
Amy's going to college in 6 years, and we can't afford it. I can't afford college for my daughter.
Yeah. So, just gives you a little bit. I mean, you understand the problem, but he chose to be governor of the state of Illinois. He ran twice to be governor.
A six-figure job, by the way.
Yes. One, what is it, 160? Because they were discussing the difference between what a senator makes and the governor makes. And I think it's like a $5,000, $6,000 differential. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Well, but he also, remember, talked about not only wanting an ambassadorship, but or maybe put me on one of these boards.
Put Patty on
yes.
the boards.
Yes.
You know, Treehouse Foods.
You can essentially get yeah. big money with not a lot of work. This is the rewriting of Rod Blagojevich, and it's courtesy of him being empowered to do so. And you know, it's just fascinating to me. We can argue about whether or not 14 years was too harsh of a sentence and whether or not 8 years amounts to anything. But what no one can argue about is what's heard on those tapes. And it wasn't just about attempting to sell a Senate seat.
No. Because you got to remember that the Senate seat, that piece actually was reinterpreted by the appellate judge.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said in that they dropped those charges as part of the sentencing scheme for him because they assumed that that was log rolling, as it was called. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember. I'd never heard that term before, but political log rolling, you do this for me, I'll do that for you. Quid pro quo, but it's not. It's to benefit the people, not necessarily to benefit the individual. And, you know, and then there it's actually the argument that Dershowitz made for Trump, which is that as a chief executive, Rod Blagojevich was just trying, if it benefited him, it benefited the state. That was the
Rod
argument.
Which is the same argument then Dershowitz would go on to make regarding the president. And
right.
It's just fascinating to me. I feel like we're in the movie Groundhog Day. And it's the same story repeating 10 years apart.
Yeah.
You know, right down to Rod Blagojevich standing on the steps of his house in Ravenswood with his wife and daughters around him and that, you know, handful of interesting supporters around him. He had a guy singing. He had another guy with a...
Ronnie Woo Woo was there.
Ronnie Woo Woo showed up. You know, whenever Ronnie Woo Woo arrives on scene, you know the story has jumped the shark.
His self-appointed Cubs mascot.
Yeah.
I do like him a little bit better than Clarky or Gracie or whatever the hell the name of that thing is.
Who doesn't wear pants.
Yeah.
Well, remember, Blagojevich at one point thought maybe he could be the commissioner of Major League Baseball. So, you know, I know the Marquee Sports Network here starts before too long, and they seem to still be staffing up.
Oh, that's a good opportunity. Listen, there's no, you saw him today. You saw how good he is today.
So good.
In terms of his ability to communicate and his ability to tell stories and weave narratives and then roll, whether it's literature, poetry, Bible verses, whatever it is, historic moments. He rolls them all in to his narrative, and it's compelling.
Rod
but it's all but stop for one second. It's all bullcrap. Him out on the steps in front of his house today, or out in front of his house today, that Rod Blagojevich is different than the guy we're just listening to on the phone, and maybe now he will be different. But I'm going to tell you something right now. Doing the wrong thing and then not acknowledging you did the wrong thing, denying you did the wrong thing, and then saying the cops are the bad guys here, which is what they're saying. I mean, that's what, you know, the president keeps calling all these people dirty cops. Dirty cops. I mean, it's crazy. And his brother yesterday on this radio show, Robert Blagojevich, saying that this is all about Comey and Fitzgerald.
Well, let's correct that, because the president not only said that yesterday, but tweeted it again today, mentioning that, you know, Blagojevich was a victim of, you know, Jim Comey and his gang. Jim Comey was in the private sector.
Correct.
He was working for he was a lawyer for a company. When Rod Blagojevich was charged, tried, convicted, and sentenced.
Right. Correct.
Now, Robert Mueller was the head of the FBI when
Correct.
It happened.
Yes.
But this case came up from Chicago, from case agents who were, as they often do and as are currently doing in another investigation, you know, they start small and then they build their way up. Mm-hmm. This was not Robert Mueller in the Hoover building handing a case against Rod Blagojevich down
Let's
to his
go
agents
get
in
him.
Chicago.
Yeah, it wasn't like that. It's never like that.
And it's just fascinating to me that there are people who are, you know, willing to believe that. All you had to do is be around Rod Blagojevich a little while to know the guy has a golden tongue and he's a very gifted politician.
Yes, very.
But he didn't do a lot of the work.
Right, he didn't show up for work at all.
He literally would go days and weeks without showing up to work.
He was never in Springfield. He would, if he was in the office, he'd be in the office up here. I should say he was rarely in Springfield. And
then he went to his campaign office, and you know where the FBI wiretapped him? All those recordings, they weren't made at the James Thompson Center or the governor's mansion in Springfield or the governor's office in Springfield. It was his home phone and the phone at his campaign office on
right.
Chicago's north side, because that's where he was, not doing the business of the people.
Well, there's people who are defending Rod Blagojevich today who are like, well, he broke into his house and he tapped his phones. Well, yeah. Why? Because that's what they were able to hear. And because they knew that's what he was going to say to people. And some of those people may have been put up to talking to him on the phone at that point, and they may have known that the feds were likely to be listening to that conversation. But let's point this out. It wasn't like he wasn't going along with the scheme. That was him coming up with ideas, right, about how he could get her on paid boards or whatever it is. He needed something in order for that sentence to go. Now hold on. Now, well, everybody does it. Well, is it right? Aren't you mad when everybody does it? Or is it just when your guy does it, it's okay, and when the other guy does it, it's not okay?
And that's the other fascinating thing here is you have political corruption in Illinois is bipartisan, right? You have people who are saying, oh, I've been tagged in multiple tweets saying, you know, this is, you know, our coverage of Blagojevich coming home and suggesting that, you know, he got a deal just because he buttered up the president. You know, oh, that's an example of bias and whatnot. And, you know, the president was just looking out for, you know, somebody who had been railroaded. Well,
yeah. Thank you, Vladimir. I appreciate that tweet. But, that has nothing to do with the truth.
But my point is these. We are all living this, right? We all pay the price of corruption. We're all the ones saying, oh, why are our property taxes so high? How come we can't fix our pension system in Illinois? You know, I guarantee you the vast majority of President Trump supporters in Illinois didn't vote for Rod Blagojevich.
Absolutely not.
But suddenly he's the hero.
Right. Right. What's left is right. Right is left. Up is down. Down is up. That's the way it is right now, because we are changing our orientation to what political dynamics are. We used to think conservatives were fiscally conservative, socially conservative, all that, you know, on that spectrum. And liberals were socially liberal, and they were, you know, they basically wanted a more leaning toward more socialist kind of government than a conservative government. And that used to be the case. You know, deficits were always the issue. Oh, the deficit's bad. We're spending too much money. We're not being fiscally responsible. And now, it doesn't matter anymore to conservatives. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to Republicans anymore. What matters to Republicans is what the president says on any given day.
Let me give an example of up and down, left and right. Pat Elwood broke this last night, and he's going to follow up on it today. The Chicago Police Union, which, you know, has been blasting Kim Fox for being soft on criminals and letting too many people out of jail who deserve to be in there. Mm-hmm. Kevin Graham, the FOP Chicago president, wrote a letter to Trump at the end of January lobbying for Blagojevich's release.
Right. That is, I find that odd.
Yeah.
Now, I get, again, this is politics in this town, though. And that's the thing, is that, is this where we're heading? Because this is very banana republic-y, right? And we were always, that's what the FBI has been trying to stop in the Justice Department and the court system and law and order types of legislators in Washington have been trying to stop forever. They're trying to stop. They tried to stop it in Mississippi during the 1960s and the 1970s. They tried to stop it here during that period of time as well. I mean, the raft of indictments and governors have got, you know, my first recollection of politics as a child was a governor going to jail. Mm. In the early Otto Kerner in the early 1970s. So that's the there's no shortage of this kind of thing happening. But if you don't, if we just decide, listen, it doesn't matter because it's our guys who are in power and they can do whatever they want while they're in power. Trust me, they'll take care of me. They're not taking care of you. They don't know who you are. They don't care about you. They use you just to get elected so that they can maintain their grip on whatever that power and whatever that is. And that's been happening in this town forever and ever and ever. And now it appears to be happening in Washington. And that's the thing that is very disconcerting. And I know I don't want to get, you know, too far afield from where we are on Blagojevich here, but it is alarming to me that this is where we are. So if you want to stop and talk about, oh, you know, Rob Blagojevich got a raw deal. Yeah. Was it too long? Fine. Is it 8 years? I'll stipulate. 8 years is enough. He should be home. I'm glad he's home with the kids. I'm glad the kids are happy and all of that. Shouldn't have done what he did, though.
And should have taken responsibility for
right.
it.
Right. And had he taken responsibility for it, Ben Bradley from WGN-TV News starting at 4 o'clock, if he had taken responsibility for that, he would have gone away for 2 to 4 years. But he didn't. Even when he was caught on the tape, because these guys are incapable of acknowledging that they ever made a mistake. All right, I gotta go. Because now I'm about to make
medication.
A mistake. Oh my God. Oh, I forgot to take that today. That's really, I am glad you mentioned that, Ben. I did forget to take it.
We'll see you at 4 on WGN.
All right, nice to see you. Yep. Goodbye. All right, let's check in now. Here is Kim Gordon from WGN Newsroom.
I got into politics to help people. I didn't get into politics to make money. I didn't get into politics to enrich my family or my friends. I got into politics because I was fortunate to live in the greatest country that's ever existed.
I mean, we're struggling financially, okay? Her business got dried up because the Tribune's been writing about every one of her real estate clients. You know, I should have looked the other way in the landfill, and then my father-in-law would take care of us. I should have done that. Incidentally, he's making money on that thing against, you know, in violation of state law. I mean, you guys are telling me I just got to suck it up for 2 years and do nothing. Give this mother his senator, him. For nothing, him.
Well, you know, one thing that we learned right there from Rod Blagojevich is that's the way politics really happens in this state. And he's talking about his father-in-law, Dick Mell, who was an alderman in the city of Chicago, a very powerful alderman, and actually the guy who blew the whistle on Rob Blagojevich in the first place, right at the Monday after Thanksgiving, because the dinner did not go well. You know, we talk about now Alderman Brendan Riley. We often talk about how, you know, you don't want to go Thanksgiving in this era because everybody's mad at each other. That was patient zero.
That's for
right?
sure.
Right back in 2007, 8, whatever that, whenever that Thanksgiving was, where all of a sudden it was like, what is he trying to do? Because literally, Dick Mell came out and said in front of a rake of microphones and bevy of cameras and said, why aren't they looking into my son-in-law?
Thanks, Pops.
Yeah. How about that? I mean, that's the kind of deal. All right. Let's first of all, now, I know we're going to talk about some city business here, too, that's very interesting. But before we do that, you've been around this a long time.
Sure.
You worked in campaigns that were against Rod Blagojevich.
That's right.
In 2006, right? You were in the Vallis campaign.
In 2002, in the primary. So when Blagojevich first ran for governor, his main rival in the Democratic primary was Paul Vallis, who had just wrapped up running the Chicago public schools. Blagojevich ultimately beat Vallis by about 20,000 votes in that primary, which was a nail-biter.
Yeah.
But I was Vallis's spokesman. And I went back just for kicks and did a Google search of all the nasty things I said about Governor Blagojevich. Mm-hmm. And it turns out almost all of them came true. I didn't predict he's going to go to federal prison for 8 years, but just about everything else he did was predicted well ahead of time.
Yeah.
And the fact that he isn't contrite, that he's, you know, he got his sentence commuted, good for him, I guess, but to walk out of the prison literally declaring himself innocent.
Right.
And the victim.
Yes, a political prisoner.
Is particularly sickening to me.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's the issue. If he'd shown up at that airport last night, and, you know, with all the assembled press, it had gotten to Denver in time. And then Chuck Gowdy sat next to him on the plane from ABC 7, sat next to him on the plane on the way home. And we're going to talk to Chuck a little later on in the program. How the hell that happened?
He looked like a very proud trophy fisherman, right? He's like taking the photo. Hey, look what I got.
Yeah. Oh, no, for sure. But had he come back and been contrite,
yeah.
I think that his... Certainly, I know this. My treatment of him would have been totally different because after 8 years, I figure under the old system, he would have gotten out in 8 years anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, they changed the federal sentencing guidelines to, you know, 85%.
Right.
So you can't get out very easy on these things. And public corruption. And that's the other thing. I just want to. I'm going to get out of soapbox here for a second. But when guys like you get elected, when hundreds of thousands of people decide that they want you to represent them, or in the case of Blagojevich, I mean, many hundreds of thousands, right, make a decision that they want him to represent them, there is an expectation of behavior. There's an expectation of obeying the law, that if you don't obey the law, or if you try to flout it, or if you try to game it for your own personal gain, especially if you're already, you know, mad about the issues, which he was. And in some of these cases, he thought it was doing both. I'm going to help the public good here. I'm going to get your grandmother an effing free ride on the CTA, right. But I need something for that.
Yeah.
And then when the government comes in, catches you doing it, and they sentence you, these judges sentence because they know it's not an average guy. These are people in power, right, abusing their power.
Well, that's it. And it's, you know, the absolute violation of the public trust.
Right.
That's why there have to be stiff penalties for public officials who abuse power, right, whether that's in Washington, D.C. or here in the city of Chicago. It's very frustrating that as far as the governor's concerned, he did no wrong. He's a victim. And Donald Trump is the best thing since sliced bread. But, you know, Rod's been living in his own reality for quite some time, before he went to prison.
Right.
And I suspect that isn't going to change anytime soon.
And long before Donald Trump came into his life, too. I mean, right. The funny thing is, you got to remember that he went on The Apprentice, you know, post-indictment.
Right.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it was like he was out of office, got impeached, and it was like the impeached governor. And they thought it was, and this tells you a little bit about sort of the television producer mindset that Donald Trump has, right? He's like, oh, what's good television? And again, it's Mark Burnett and all these other people that do it, but he's signing off on it.
Sure.
And it's like, that's, oh, yeah, the impeached governor, great, that's, you know, that's perfect. And that was a point. And by the way, in that era, in 2009 or whatever that was, he was on The Apprentice.
Yeah.
Donald Trump was a Democrat. Right.
Yeah, I mean, so about a minute. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really kind of an interesting world. That's my problem, is that nothing's real. You know, when are we going to get back to something being real?
Yeah. I'd like to hit the reset button on that one, too.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what's going to happen there, Alderman. Mm. All right. On the other side, we're going to stop down here for traffic and weather. Lauren's going to get us all caught up. But on the other side, I want to talk about a couple different things here. First of all, you had an idea about rideshare programs, and we're going to talk about that because something bad happened over the weekend in terms of how the rideshare operators are. The rules are too loose on this. I've always said they are too loose on this, and I think it has now been proven, and I'd like you to fix that for me. And then, also, we're going to rename Lakeshore Drive. All right, all of that coming your way, but first, let's check in with Lauren. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, Alderman Brendan Riley is joining us. We were talking about Rob Blagojevich, but I want to just take a moment off because, you know, we still have, there are things actually happening in our world that we have to keep our eye on here other than him. Although he, like what happens in Washington now, it's the same deal. It's like he will be the center of attention for a while. He'll find his way into all kinds of stuff.
Good time to go on a vacation.
Last time you were here a couple weeks ago, we were talking about the rideshare rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there just seems to be, you know, too much of the wild, wild west with the rideshare here. And there weren't enough rules in the beginning. They've at least tightened them at O'Hare now, mm-hmm. thank God,
yep.
so that it's not so much of a mess. But downtown, still, it's just too much. And who knows who anybody is when they're pulling up with their rideshare little sticker that they can steal out of somebody else's car.
Well, and that's exactly the problem. You can photocopy an Uber decal and tape that in your windshield, and suddenly you look like an Uber.
Right.
So the ordinance that you're talking about was an ordinance that would crack down on people who impersonate rideshare drivers. And the reason why that's important, we actually had an incident this weekend during the NBA All-Star Weekend. Three women from Wisconsin drove their big black SUV downtown, and they were trolling nightclubs looking for drunk people who were trying to hail Ubers. And sure enough, a drunk partygoer jumped in the back of the SUV. Thankfully, a police squad was following that SUV because they were behaving suspiciously. They witnessed a gun drawn on this victim as the SUV was pulling away. They rolled their blues and pursued the SUV. High-speed chase. These people.
Was the guy still in it?
For a time. These people threw the victim out of the moving vehicle during the chase. Serious injuries, taken to the emergency room. I believe he's going to be okay. But very scary. And the good news, the police did catch the three suspects.
And they're at home confinement right now.
That's a whole other problem. Separate we could talk about. That's a whole other radio show.
Yeah.
But the good news is they caught them. But what the police, the reason they asked for me to pass this new ordinance that has $10,000 fines for impersonating a rideshare person is that they can proactively stop that vehicle when they see it trolling to see whether or not they're really a rideshare driver. And if they're not, they can make an arrest under the ordinance that just passed council today. But this weekend, that probably could have been prevented had that law been on the books. So I got some calls from police commanders over the weekend. They were really eager to see that pass today. So that'll be going on the books and in effect. And my hope is that that massive fine is a deterrent. I put in an additional ordinance today that would even make this new ordinance even tougher by allowing cars to be impounded as well. Take away the actual weapon they're using to rob people.
I'm glad you're doing it. Thank you for doing it, because this is a very, this is getting weirder and weirder in this city. I'm noticing a turn. There seemed to be from 2016, which was a very bad year,
mm-hmm.
but it was a bad year for violent crime and specifically violent gang crime. You see this in peaks and valleys throughout history.
Right.
When you get, and sometimes it's because there's certain leaders that end up either being murdered or going to prison, and then there's a struggle for power.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2016, that was happening in the main.
Right.
And now you're starting to see not so much that, but you're starting to see an emboldened kid, generally like teenagers, mm-hmm. late teenagers, who are, and maybe they're being put up to it by guys older than them or whatever it happens to be, but you see an emboldened sort of, whether it's snatch and grab, it's armed robberies, it's carjackings, or two in my neighborhood this weekend. Mm-hmm. That makes six so far this month in my neighborhood.
Yeah, it's unacceptable, Ro, and you're right. There is no fear of consequences anymore.
Because there aren't any. I want to bring this up. Tom Dart's going to join us coming up after the county sheriff, coming up after 4 o'clock, talk about something else. And he was Rob Blagojevich's roommate down in Springfield when they were in the legislature together. Yeah, we'll talk about what the hair products look like. But there's a story here. There, a police officer by the name of Soto was shot in the back by an armed assailant.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, his vest saved his life.
Right.
Still injured, because that's a compression injury. There's all kinds of things happening, but he's alive.
Mm-hmm.
He, the guy who shot him, who has plenty of priors, and is now been charged with the attempted murder of a peace officer has been put on home confinement. Now, how is that even remotely possible? And home confinement, and people can understand this. You don't, they're not going to catch you if you leave on home confinement.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The sheriff's office does not have even close to the infrastructure required to track that program. And I know the sheriff's been critical of it. They're not giving him the resources he needs to properly ensure that these folks are where they're supposed to be.
Right. And he's got beds. He's got plenty of beds over there.
Well, they sure do. And a lot of folks are proud about how empty the jail is. The problem is, oftentimes when the jail is empty, that means a lot of folks are on the street doing bad things,
There are bad people in this town who are intent upon hurting other people or taking stuff from other people that's not theirs.
And when you talk to the police, they're incredibly frustrated. They're doing the hard work, the good police work. They're catching the bad guys, but they're catching the same bad guys over and over and over because of personal recognizance bonds, home monitoring, the bracelet system. All of it's baloney.
Right.
And I think that there's a direct correlation between the lack of consequences for these acts and the spike in crime downtown and on the transit system. I think they're absolutely linked to one another. And, you know, that has a lot to do with criminal justice reform, which is something that I do support very much. But
it has to be smart.
It has to be smart, and it has to still allow for a whole lot of discretion. And, you know, the fact that gang leaders are using and recruiting children to commit the gun crimes because they know those kids won't get locked up. They found a way to hack the system, and it's not working in the interest of the people and the taxpayer. We need to change that. Kids that are committing crimes with guns need to face some consequences. Doesn't mean you put them in jail for life, but you need to make sure that kids know you commit any crime with a gun, whether you pull the trigger or not, severe consequences for that. Not a slap on the wrist, a bologna sandwich, and a ride home to mom.
You are 300% more likely in this town, if you get arrested, if you're a felon with a gun and you get arrested, you are 300% more likely to be put on electronic monitoring than you were 3 years ago. And if you get caught selling marijuana on the street in front of a cannabis store, you are 50% more likely to go to jail and stay in jail than you were 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Why are we putting the pot guys in jail and the felons with guns, and including aggravated the unlawful use of a weapon, which means firing the weapon, right? Or using it in the commission of a crime. Those guys are 150% more likely to go on home monitoring. I'm sorry. It's just that is not working.
No, it's incredibly frustrating. And look, I agree with those folks who want to reform the system to stop jailing folks who are selling small quantities of marijuana. That is a waste of jail beds. And frankly, that's how you're ruining people who could be rehabilitated. But people who are committing gun crimes, trigger pulled or not.
Yes, that's a different deal.
That's what the beds in the jail are meant for.
Right.
So, I hope that you have a good conversation with Sheriff Dart. I'm a fan of his, and I know that he is frustrated.
I've never met him. I have no idea what it's
like. One portion of our criminal justice system is sorely lacking, and I would argue that's in prosecution.
I just want to hear him talk about Rob Blagojevich's hair for just a few minutes.
Well, he'd know it well.
Yes, he would have.
He had an up-close view.
All right. Before we let you go, I know I got like 30 seconds here, but the Lori Lightfoot, the mayor, is considering they want to change the rules about how we're going to finance or tax the new casino, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to induce some people to come in and do this, because casino operators don't want to do it.
Yeah, the tax rate is an obstacle. And so Mayor Lightfoot has been lobbying the governor and the state legislature to change that structure a bit so it's a bit more alluring to potential casino investors. Right now, you can't even manufacture a point and a half or 2-point margin under that structure, and that's just too much risk. You have to outlay tens of millions of dollars in the front end, and then what happens? You make 1% profit if you're lucky.
You know what I like about her? You can tell she's not on the take because she's moving quickly. She's not waiting for the best offer to come in to make that difference. Well,
that's what I like about this mayor.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't about horse trading. This is really about just getting things done.
That's
so
it.
I appreciate her for that.
Same here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Alderman. Bro. Appreciate it. News coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in 2.
Chicago's very own
It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, joining us on the Super Celebrity Hotline, He's the sheriff of the county of Cook. I'm not quite sure that qualifies as a super celebrity, but we're going to take it anyway. Before we get into Sheriff, many of the things that are bothering me, and bothering a lot of people in town right now, I want to ask you, because I know that back at the beginning of your political career, you were a state legislator along with Rod Blagojevich. And for a while, you guys all like would jam into houses down in Springfield or apartments. And is it not true that you were his roommate?
Yeah, for like 6 months down there, mm-hmm. you know, we roomed together. And, you know, he was, you know, you have to, you know, partner up with people if you're going to make ends meet, unless you're, you know, independently wealthy. And I was not, I didn't know other income. I was one of the only lawyers down there who wasn't practicing law. I did legislating as a full-time job, you know, novel concept. Mm-hmm. So I was making not too much. And so I had to partner up with somebody. He was a new freshman there. We'd never known each other. And so we were together for, I think, like a year, like one and a half sessions. And so, you know, we got to know each other. And, you know, people would say he was an engaging guy, you know, who could tell a good story and all the like, but yep. Definitely, you know, on different wavelength than myself, you know.
Yeah. I just want to know because you know, I see you on television quite a bit, and always in a Mount Carmel hoodie or sweatshirt, and sometimes your hair is tousled. You were like the anti-hair too.
Together. Yeah, but you know, the thing that I think back on, it's actually pretty comical, is that he was big into like going for runs. And so we would, you know, alarm would go off to go out to our committees we were on, and the doors would open from our separate rooms, and I'd be wearing a suit of all things. The only time in my life I think I wore suits. And I'd come out with a suit, and he'd be in a running outfit. So it was sort of like the tables were turned there. You know, he was heading out to run, and I was heading off to our committee that we were.
Right, as opposed to legislating. Hey, what is your reaction to this?
You know, I don't even know where to start. You know, it's one of those things where with Trump, you've got your meter of what's outrageous is so broken. You don't know how to judge anything anymore. But just the litany of the people that he was pardoning, commuting, and all the rest of the stuff just makes your head spin. I mean, you know, we sit through, you know, these real issues here in the criminal justice system each and every day. Some of them are really fixable if people put time into them. We get very little attention at all. And yet then you have something like this, and you get, you know, the wealthy and the celebrities, and they're pushed to the front of the list, and, you know, they get taken care of. And, you know, the whole nonsense, you know, I hope there was no one that actually believed his nonsense about draining the swamp. It was like, Jesus, you got to be kidding me. Here he is with the very people that everyone believes were the swamp dwellers, and those are the people that get the attention. Those are the people, the commutations and pardons and the like. And you just have to sit there and say to yourself, you know, you'd love to say, you know, this is shocking or surprising, but from, you know, Trump, I mean, this is more of the same, unfortunately. And you just, you don't know how to even, you know, take this stuff in anymore.
Well, as a county sheriff, you have, in a major county, one of the largest counties in the nation, you have a unique perspective on how to deal with crime, because you're dealing with all kinds, right? Because people forget about the county sheriff's office. Obviously, you're the chief jailer and bottle washer, but your guys are out patrolling the streets of Chicago and the streets of unincorporated parts of Cook County, the tiniest little municipalities. You've taken over a number of the really troubled communities down in the south suburbs here to try to, you know, get the rule of law back on the streets. It is amazing to me that we're so conflicted by the distractions of this that, you know, there are rules, there are laws, there are things we're supposed to do and that you're supposed to follow. And the idea that you don't always have to follow them, because if the guy who can let you out and give you a buddy pass will give you a buddy pass, which, by the way, has happened in Chicago, right, in a lot of ways, in a lot of times, whether, you know, you knew somebody, you had a guy.
Yeah.
Whether it was an alderman or it was, you know, the mayor, was it whatever else. And there were people that were abusing the system and were getting away with it. And we were really sick and tired and mad about it.
Yeah.
And when Blagojevich got those 14 years, there were a lot of people like, yeah, that's way. Finally, somebody has to pay a price for all of this. And now he comes out in 8. I'm a fairly merciful person. So I'm like, OK, fine. 8 is enough. I'll stipulate to that.
Yeah.
But him coming out and doing a victory lap, like he said, you know, he said this wasn't this is a persecution masquerading as a prosecution, that eventually truth will win out. He's quoting Martin Luther King. This guy's not Jesus. He's not Mana. He's this guy. We know. We heard the tapes.
Yeah, I mean, the tapes have all been heard. This case has been not just tried in front of a jury. It's been through virtually every appellate level possible and examined and reexamined to see if there was anything wrong with the prosecution, any flaws in it, if it was a over-aggressive prosecutor, the judge went too far. All that stuff was analyzed, and they all said, no, this was appropriate. And given the state of Illinois and the status of all of the different issues that we have with government corruption and stuff, I don't think anybody was terribly shocked or surprised by it, and you know, about the sentence and everything like that. And it's just now you say you just feel that everything is so unmoored now that the abnormal is now the normal. And so I don't even know how you do it. I mean, how do you begin to explain this? How do you explain this to kids? How do you explain this to people that really you should be able to tell them, as you said, that there's rules, people follow them, when they break them, there's consequences to them, instead of, well, no, actually, he knows somebody, and so that was taken care of, and, oh, that wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, where does this stop?
I don't, well, hold on. We're going to stop right now, because Lauren's got to check your weather. But I want to come right back. I want to talk to you. Let's talk about some other things here, because there's an electronic monitoring story here that is just breaking my heart. I want to ask you about. And also, what resources you guys have to go fix a problem that is being made for you right now, and by other politicians and other legislation in the state. So we're going to get to that in just 1 second, because the streets are not as safe as they need to be. And this is not a city known for safe streets, but the streets are even less safe than they were before.
And hard to believe.
Yeah, it's crazy. And with all the technology, you'd think we'd be able to fix this. But hold on 1 second. Tom Dart is our county sheriff. We'll come right back to him. But first, here's Lauren with the traffic and weather.
When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN TV.
Oh, God, that was so well done, Kevin.
Yeah, I figured I'd end with a dramatic.
Yeah, really TV well done. There. Tom Dart is the Cook County Sheriff. He's joining us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline. All right, Tom, we have a problem here. Because
we have multiple problems.
Now, I know that we had Kim Fox in last week, and we were talking about this. And one of the things that is most, she's a Cook County state's attorney, by the way, for people who are wondering. And it is an election year, and there's a lot of people making big deals. You know, when you get about a month out of an election, you know, all the issues start to come up, and it becomes, you know, and then we forget about them after the election. But this one we will not forget about, because what you are seeing now, what's your jail capacity? What do you actually have?
The capacity is probably a little over
10,000.
Mm-hmm. And today we have about 5,700 in custody.
5,700 in custody. So you have room for, let's just round it and call another 5,000.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started 14 some years ago now, we had about 11,000 people in custody.
And there was a consent decree, and I understand this, and Kim Fox brought this up during the interview, that there was a consent decree because the federal government thought that the treatment of inmates at Cook County Jail from the 1980s into the 1990s, before you were there, was so onerous, because people, they were housing 12 to 14,000, depending on the year.
Oh,
there.
God, yeah.
And they were sleeping on the floors and in day rooms and all that stuff. So, and I get that that's a problem, but now, with the notion of criminal justice reform, it's basically like the criminal justice system, whether it's a state's attorney's office or it's the judicial system, because cops, your guys and the Chicago Police Department and all the other, they're still making arrests.
Yeah.
Right. But then when they get into the system, they're offered this, in a lot of cases, electronic monitoring, so you can get to go home and you have to be on an ankle monitor.
Well, see, you know, it's interesting, too, that you mentioned that consent decree back then about the overcrowding, because that's the part that I've been referencing to people. The overcrowding, part of the order was the judge said to Cook County, get rid of the overcrowding, get rid of the people on the floor. So electronic monitoring was developed out of whole cloth. So it wasn't used. It hadn't been around. It hasn't been used many places. All of a sudden, it was like, well, the judge is saying you got to release people from the jail. It's not reasonable to just let them walk out the door. So let's put bracelets on people. So back in the, I think, 80s and 90s, they started putting bracelets on people. But it was always just for nonviolent people to just reduce the population. And so literally, correctional officers would walk up and down tiers and with files in their hands, and they'd pick guys who had low-level cases. Most often, they didn't know what the background of the individual was. They just knew the case that had them there was low-level. They'd say, okay, you come here, and you come here, and you come here, and then they'd go down, they'd put them in a room, they'd take them out, put bracelets on them, put them in their house, and off they'd go. But the notion was always that was just for overcrowding, and it was just for low-level offenders. What ended up happening, though, is in typical, you know, Cook County fashion, let's throw logic and history out the window, and then in the course of bond reform, which was desperately needed, I mean, I had thousands of people at times, Ro, who were sitting in their jail on goofy charges, and needed $50 to get out, and they couldn't get it. And so in our inimitable wisdom, instead of, you know, saying, okay, we're going to let you go because it's not a serious case, it costs about $160-some a day to house somebody who has no mental illness, has no issues. So we were basically swallowing $160 a day because the guy couldn't come up with $50 on a goofy case. And so, yeah, bond reform is desperately needed to get those guys out of there who were just poor people, mentally ill people, and so on. But we went way too far. The bond reform, which was desperately needed, then all of a sudden swept in gun offenders. And now all of a sudden the solution was not only gun offenders were going out at a number that has never been seen before, but the response then was, let's throw electronic monitoring bracelets on them, something that was never developed for gun offenders. It was for drug offenders with the notion that if they ran out of the house, you know, not a big deal, we'll eventually find them. They're just going to look for more drugs, and they're not going to harm anybody. Well, now all of a sudden you're throwing bracelets that are this passive system that just lets me know someone ran out of a house and putting them on people with gun charges. And the natural result is there's more violence on the street. And I've been telling this to the different members of the criminal justice system for over 2 years, and to the point where I wasn't releasing people, and so they sued me in court to make me release people. They called me all sorts of pleasant names as well, and it's like, you know what, bond reform was needed, but there was no one that thought the answer here was, we got to get more gun offenders on the street. And to put it in perspective, Ro, my number one category of people on home monitoring, as I said, was always drug offenders. Now that's like my fourth or fifth highest group of people on the electronic monitoring. My largest group of people on electronic monitoring by far is people charged with aggravated UUW.
Unlawful use of a weapon.
Unlawful use of a weapon.
That's pulling out a gun, firing it, or using it in the commission
of a crime. Not firing it in that case. Not the aggravated UUW. That's possessing the loaded gun in your body, and you know you have access to it. It's fully loaded, and that. But the next category after that is UUW by felon. So that means you're a convicted felon who has a gun on you. Those are my two biggest groups of people now that are on home monitoring, a device that was developed for drug offenders.
Okay, so I want to bring up a case, a specific case. There was a police officer the day after Samuel Jimenez died in the Mercy Hospital.
Yeah,
the active shooter at Mercy Hospital, a Chicago police officer, was killed.
Yeah.
The following day, Officer Fernando Soto was on patrol, encountered a gunman who shot him in the back, and his vest saved his life. That shooter is now at home. This is a year and a half ago. That shooter is now on electronic monitoring. He's been charged with numerous counts of attempted murder and aggravated battery with a firearm. Attempted murder of a peace officer, which has an upward departure. And it is just, to me, a story I cannot believe. How does a guy like that get out?
It does not make any sense.
But who's responsible for that? I want to know. Who? I mean, I know the judge.
The judge had to order it. There was no other person that makes that decision other than the judge sitting in that case. It could have been the initial judge, or it could have been a judge who eventually got the case, but those are the only ones that can put them on that program. But I'd love to tell you that's an anomaly, but once again, circling back to this electronic monitoring program developed for overcrowding and getting nonviolent people out of the jail, I presently have just under 30 people on electronic monitoring who are charged with murder. This is not what you're supposed to do.
No, that's murder.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
This is not.
Yes.
This is not. This is not going and you know, stealing a sweater at Macy's. I get it. I mean, I don't like the fact that people are doing that either. But that if you want to put somebody on electronic monitoring, and if they leave their house, which by the way, a judge can say they can leave their house on electronic monitoring if they have a job or they got to go to school or they have a responsibility to a child. That judge will allow them between certain hours to leave, and it's okay. But even if they don't have that and they leave, there's no way you're going to get them because you don't have enough cops and cars to go out and get these guys.
Because we never were supposed to. Because once again, when you're just putting nonviolent people out there, the notion was they have no incentive to run. But if they do, they weren't going to harm anybody. They have no background in harming people. They have a drug problem. That's it. And so you weren't supposed to. And so when I've asked for more bodies now that I have this different group of people foisted on me, the response has been no. I don't get the extra bodies. And the reality of this is that, like, I think the number is 92 or 94% of the people on all of my home monitoring programs, so all 2,400 people. And mind you, that number is insane. We're by far the largest home monitoring program in the country, by far. But of the 2,400.
Well, I want to know who got the contract on that.
I think there's two of them, to be honest with you. Right. But the reality of it is that 90-some percent of those 2,400 people, they get movement. Some of it's very good. You know, they get movement to go to school. They get movement to go to their job. That's all good and fine. But there's a wide breadth of movement that's given where people get to go and visit somebody or go do this. But once again, that means we're shutting the device off, turning it on, shutting it off, turning it on, making sure they made it to work, you know, contacting their work. Did he show up for work? Yes, he did. Okay. Giving him enough time to get back to his house. Is this a precise system? Oh, no, it's not. And we've said that. That's because it was never developed for this group of people. And all we say is, hey, listen, bond reform was desperately needed. I mean, how else can a thoughtful person say that when literally bond hearings literally in felony courts took on average 21 seconds, 21 seconds for the prosecutor to say why the guy should be locked up, the public defender to go through why he shouldn't be locked up, and then the judge to rule on it. So that was insane. I mean, that was an abomination, 21 seconds to decide whether a person's going home or sitting in a jail. And so it was needed, but the pendulum has swung so far now, and if we could just focus on the gun offenders, okay, and then we can parse that if you want. If you want to talk about a guy who's a businessman who was pulled over on a speeding ticket and had a gun on him, but he was going into a neighborhood he didn't feel secure in, so he had a gun with him, as opposed to a guy who was pulled over and had an AK-47 in his background, in his back seat. It's like, you know, all right, we can draw a distinction between that, and then we can all be happy. But just this other thing, none of this makes any sense. And people get hurt.
Welcome to the County of Cook. Thank you, Sheriff Tom Dart. Appreciate
your
time. Thanks.
Thank you. Take
all
care.
Right. Bye. Let's check in now with Kim Gordon in the WGN Newsroom.
I want to say again to the people of Illinois who twice elected me governor, I didn't let you down. I would have let you down if I gave into this. But resistance to tyrants is obedience to God.
I told my nephew, Alex, he just turned 26 today. I said, Alex, you know, I called him for his birthday, and I said, it's just too bad you're not 4 years older, because I could have given you a sentence for your birthday.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I've got this thing, and it's golden. Right. And I'm just not giving it up for nothing. I'm not going to do it. And I can always parachute use it and parachute me there. I talked to Fred about that. You know, there's life after that if I do it.
That's the man of God that we saw on the steps of his home today and then from 12 years ago. Natasha Kareki joins us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline. And Natasha, of course, is the national politics reporter for Politico and is in wrote a book about, you were at the Sun-Times for many, many, many years, and you wrote a book about the Rob Blagojevich trial. And the experience that we all had to go through for this, and you were in the courtroom for many of those hours. And Ji Soo Kyi is joining us right now as well. She also was in the courtroom for many of those hours. And I just want to get, first of all, Natasha, your reaction to what you saw in front of the governor's house today.
Thanks for having me on. First of all. So my reaction is it's just vintage Blagojevich, right? It's, you know, he's going right back to admitting nothing, not apologizing, acting as if this was a pardon. It was not. It was a shortened sentence. He served 8 years. That's more than George Ryan. But he's still spinning it. He's spinning it now that he was a victim. And now he has a very powerful ally who's on his side, the President of the United States. So it's, you know, to me, I just thought, here we go again. Like, it's starting up. The media's all over him again. Who knows where we're going to go from here?
Well, I have my own suspicions. We'll get to that in just a second. But I want to read the tweet from the president this morning. I mean, it's not as though the president just did this and it was like a fire and forget moment. This is something that he's particularly, I think, going to continue to use, because he sees and will see tonight on the Fox News Channel. He sees the talent that Rob Blagojevich has for spin and for being a guy that can become the center of attention. He's basically, in a lot of ways, I look at it this way, because I met Rob Blagojevich first, but I kind of think that Trump's stealing Rod's act. That's the way I look at it. I know that the president would look at it very, very differently, but it is what it is. But the president today tweeted, Rob Blagojevich did not sell the Senate seat. He served 8 years in prison with many remaining. He paid a big price, another Comey gang deal. Thank you to at Lisa Marie Booth, who really gets what's going on at Fox News. He also tagged them on it, too. And, you know, the thing is that Comey, again, James Comey was not in the FBI during any of this. He was in private practice as a lawyer. I don't understand. I mean, but there will be people, you know, that's details be damned in a moment like this. And I do not understand how somebody responsible, somebody in power, a president can do that.
So Robert Mueller was the head of the FBI at the time, notably. Trump did not mention that. And I think Patty Blagojevich was very savvy here, you know, going on Fox News and pleading her case. And at a moment, finally, for them, at this political moment where she knew what to say and how to get Trump's attention. And it worked. I mean, the president admitted she saw her on Fox News and she was talking directly to him and saying things like that, the buzzwords of James Comey and, you know, the Department of corrupt Department of Justice and FBI, and you know, Fitzgerald, of course, Patrick Fitzgerald, of course, is the special prosecutor in the Scooter Libby case. Trump pardons Libby, so you know, there's a lot going on there in terms of what his political interest is. Not to mention the fact that the, you know, the crime involved Barack Obama's Senate seat.
Yeah.
You know, not the least of which. So,
not that we can forget that. And it was, well, you hear so much of that in the tapes. And again, we go back to this because you guys both sat in the courtroom for so much of this. You heard the tapes over and over and over again. And they were put in context by the government. And there was, in the first trial, which I thought was defended as well as you can defend a guy that had so much evidence against him by Sam Adams, junior and senior. It was masterful that they were able to get one juror to go, I don't think I can convict, right? And that there was a hung jury, and the government went all over it again. All right, Natasha, I'm going to let you go because I know you continue to be on deadline for this, because Politico's interested in this story today. I saw you on CNN. What's the name of your book again?
Only in Chicago.
Only in Chicago. Yes, that's appropriate. Thanks.
Thank you.
Natasha Kerecki from Politico. All right. We'll come right back on the other side. We'll get some phone calls. 312-981-7200. That's our telephone number if you want to jump on the line and give your reaction to this. Maybe you thought Blago is great, and yes, he should be governor again. Maybe you agree with me and think that this, I want to wake up and have none of this have ever happened. But it did. We'll do that on the other side. But first, Lauren Lapka's got the traffic and the weather. All right. Let's check back in. Well, let me. I need to play this little piece of audio for you. Then we'll go back to your phones. Ji Suk Yee is with us. You hear her on the Wintrust Business Lunch right here on 720 WGN. But she was in the courtroom working for ABC7 in the courtroom through the entire Blagojevich trial. You were a news producer at that point.
Yes. And full disclosure, the first trial.
That's good enough for me. So you saw Sam Adam and his amazing performance. But this, I just want to play this for you. This is what the governor, former governor, I'd like to say disgraced governor, but apparently not, said in front of his house today.
I got into politics to help people. I didn't get into politics to make money. I didn't get into politics to enrich my family or my friends. I got into politics because I was fortunate to live in the greatest country that's ever existed.
Okay, that was today. This was late 2008.
Yeah, we got the message. Grateful and appreciative, huh? I think a 501c4. Can we get his friend Warren Buffett or some of those guys to help us on something like that?
What, for you?
Yeah. Do they think that I would just appoint Val or Jarrett for nothing? Just to make him happy?
Hey, senators make $169,300.
So more than what I make. 169, huh?
Yeah, 169.3.
But, you know, what about Patty on some, you know, corporate boards? Paid corporate boards right now. Can they help us that way? Treehouse Foods, the one that, what's her name, was on for $65,000. Now, can we get Patty a couple of those? But if they feel like they can do this and not give me anything under just some vague assurances or something, then I'll go Jesse Jr. I mean, the arrogance of these people.
Yeah, what have I gotten for? Oh, the people are going to be mad and the newspapers, they'll all of you.
All right, there's our guy. All right, we'll get to the phones in 1 second here. 302-981-7200. Your reaction to today that Rob Blagojevich says, listen, I am a political prisoner. I was done dirt by the same people who are that went after Donald Trump, and the Donald Trump is his now his savior, literally his savior, and is a guy that he will a never ending thankfulness for this.
And Ro, juxtaposing those clips, I know what you're getting at. You're saying, who is the real Rod Blagojevich?
Yes.
And I truly do believe that most people believe that it lies somewhere in the middle. And I don't think the president would have commuted the sentence if he didn't get the general sense that there has always been a reluctance by people, like even the jurors, and this is what happened in the first trial, even in the second trial, even though he was convicted, when jurors were interviewed afterwards, they were still kind of wishy, a couple of them were wishy-washy about, well, I don't know, I did vote, you know, I did vote to convict, but I don't know if I really did the right thing. I think ultimately there's just been a big reluctance about, do we throw the book at him? And that's been pervasive in public opinion, which I think, you know, that's a problem because, you know, that shows how people are so fed up with politics as usual. And their assumption is that they're so disillusioned that this is how politics and power works, that this is what it takes to get stuff done, especially here in the state of Illinois and in Chicago as well.
Well, right. And they figure everybody's doing it. So if this guy did it, I like this guy. So if this guy did it, what do I care? Because everybody else is doing it. And I think we feel so disconnected from the idea of representation, not necessarily the government, because we deal with the government all the time, but the idea that you're being represented and that your voice may actually mean something. Because I think, well, the only voices that mean stuff are the people who pay the politicians anyway. So yes, there's a cynicism to the entire process. I totally understand that. And then when you get a guy, and I think in a lot of ways, I agree with you, in a lot of ways, that's why Rob Blagojevich was not particularly popular at the end. He had a 13% approval rating. But these populist kind of politicians like Donald Trump or like Rod Blagojevich, people like them because, hey, they're not like the other ones. They're different and they're saying things and they're making me feel better about it. And so even if I'm not connected to this, at least I can be entertained by it.
Well, I think even maybe entertained isn't necessarily the right word. I'm sure a lot of people are entertained, but I think, you know, you've met those people where you have a feeling, like even a gut feeling, that maybe they're not telling you the complete truth. Maybe there's a little bit of, you know, there's grandiosity in it. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, maybe fudging the numbers or yes, you know, spinning a tall tale.
Fabulists.
Yes.
We had to learn that word.
Okay. So, but even though you've met people like that, you've also met that person that is that way, but also is extremely likable. And I think he was able to walk that line.
He's not likable, except when you hear that other side of him and you hear the part when he, you know, what he said and how he said it when he didn't think people were listening. Although at the end he did, because he had his brother get the Illinois State Police to sweep his house and his office for the bucks. All right, let's talk to Joe on WGN. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, as much of a crook as he was, I think the sentence was way too harsh, and it's probably time for him to get out. Considering that George Ryan got 6 years, and he had blood on his hands. In this case, Blagojevich doesn't have any blood on his hands. George Ryan sold driver's licenses. One of the truck drivers who bought one killed a whole family.
Right, that's true.
So, look at it that way. It's time for him to get out. Take care.
All right, thank you. You too.
See, he doesn't want to throw the book at him.
Right, he didn't. And I get that. I mean, I get the part. I understand the issue with George Ryan, and they say, well, you know, he did 8 years. George Ryan did 6.5. George, let me just go back and explain that for those who may not be familiar with what happened there. George Ryan, they used to be able to get commercial driver's licenses by going to the Secretary of State's office, and across the counter, you just give cash across the counter. And then those people who were taking it were bagging it for George Ryan and pay, you know, there was a kickback system, you know, in order to just buy the stuff before you actually before you had to pass a test for it. And there was a very tragic event and a very fiery crash with a guy who was not properly licensed who ended up, as the caller said, killed an entire family. He's right. It's not a direct result, but it is a direct result of the environment of what was created by George Ryan. Absolutely right. Problem we have, though, is that Rod Blagojevich ran as the reformer. He ran as a guy who's never going to do that. I'm just going to do everything for you. And I think the other piece of this is that Rod Blagojevich also believes, even if he's trying to get his wife a job in exchange for the Senate seat, he's doing the right thing by the people.
I don't think he thinks he's doing anything wrong when he's on those tapes.
And you sat there in that courtroom. And when you saw him in that courtroom, what stands out for you about those moments?
So, you know, going back to 2010, I can only describe the environment as electric, because you're speaking of, you know, George Ryan. The feds felt really confident. They felt that this was a slam dunk. If there was anything close to a smoking gun, it was going to be these tapes. Mm-hmm. And hearing these tapes, it was so shocking. I mean, it was just scandalous. It was astonishing. Right. And that's what ran on the news.
Sound. Just the sound of him. Yeah,
just the fact that his... it was sounded.
He was manic in the tapes.
An egomaniac.
Yeah.
And that, so when the feds weren't able to make that a slam dunk, that's when, whoa, that was the big shocker.
Right. And, but again, great lawyers can get people who are guilty off, right? It happens every day in courtrooms and this in jury trials. And so this is it was amazing lawyering. It was very well done. It was done in a populist way. And remember, he was out there trying to see the jury too. He was going on The Apprentice, right? As he was awaiting trial.
It was incredibly theatrical from every point of view.
Yeah.
Even the prosecutors were a little more colorful, perhaps, in their comments. Yeah. Remember the commentary about Abraham Lincoln would be rolling over in his grave.
Right.
And of course, Sam Adams was incredibly colorful too.
Yes.
So it was theater at its best.
Yes, it was. Jisoo Kim, you can hear on the Wind Trust Business Lunch every day at noon right here. Thank you. We got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom too.
Radio Chicago. This is AM 720.
WGN.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four. Three.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. If we must. Nothing to see here. Checking in at
number five.
Free to do what I want. Any hotel.
Richard Roper has joined us in the studio. Rod Blagojevich is a free man. 14-year sentence commuted by the president yesterday. Walked out of the federal penitentiary in Aurora, Colorado last night. Got in a car. Got to Denver International Airport, about 20 minutes away. Was then mobbed by reporters who were at the airport while he was getting his ticket at the line. You had to go up there where you don't have your ticket on your phone because you don't have a phone. So you got a ticket on a card and you got to go. You got to go.
Yeah.
And he's up there and there's Julie Unruh from Channel 9 and Chuck Gowdy from Channel 7 is going to join us in a little bit. And then he gets on the airplane and who sits next to him but Chuck Gowdy? I don't want to. I've known Chuck for a long time and we're friends. I don't want to sit next to him on a plane. He's constantly asking too many questions. Imagine.
The I-team always gets seats with I on them. You're in 27I or 7I. It's one of the things they love to do. Yeah, it was like, it reminded me of that scene. Remember in Castaway when Tom Hanks was on that island for like 4 years?
Yep, yeah.
And then they finally put him on the plane and they had to explain to him a lot has changed. Right. We had a funeral for you. You had a funeral for me?
Yes, right.
The Helen Hunt moved on.
Yeah, Houston Oilers moved to Tennessee. Huh. All right. Anyway, here's the. You know, let's talk a little bit about who praised whom. So he was in front of his home today, and he went out and he praised the president, thanking him for everything.
We want to express our most profound and everlasting gratitude to President Trump. How do you properly thank someone who's given you back the freedom that was stolen from you? He didn't have to do this. He's a Republican president. I was a Democratic governor. And doing this does nothing to help his politics. President Trump is a man who is tough and outspoken, but he also has a kind heart. This is an act of kindness, and I also believe it's the beginning of the process to actually turn an injustice into a justice.
Yeah, it does help his politics. It's exactly in line with his politics because it's a continuation of the narrative that Rob Blagojevich becomes another victim of James Comey, who wasn't even in the Justice Department during any of this Blagojevich stuff. And Robert Mueller, who was the head of the FBI then, who did the Mueller report. And it plays into the cast of characters that he's looking for. But
100%.
So now, one of the reasons that the judge here, James Agle, handed down such a harsh 14-year prison sentence was because Blagojevich's predecessor, George Ryan, was already in jail for public corruption. And the governor's mansion, you know, had become a place where if you weren't doing the right thing, you got to do the right thing because everybody else is doing the wrong thing. Got to do the right thing. So
that's what Rod ran on. He was going to drain the prairie.
Yes.
right?
Something like that. And George Ryan, very interesting. He spoke to Channel 9, WGN-TV this morning about his reaction to all this.
Well, I think it's probably the fair thing to do. I thought his sentence was way out of line in 14 years. But I'm not so much glad for him as I am his kids. I don't know what another 5 or 6 years would make any kind of a difference in what he's going to do or what he isn't going to do. And so it relieves the taxpayers of taking care of him for another 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I don't think that's the point. But okay, fine. Well, that's his reaction. Now, here's Mayor Lightfoot, and she says that... I'm not 100% comfortable with the attitude of the governor today.
The difference between most of them and Rod Blagojevich is that they accept responsibility for the crimes that they have committed. They are willing to do what's necessary to make amends for the harm that they cause. You know, some people say, well, don't you have sympathy for his family? I have sympathy for every family, mine included. Where you have a loved one who's incarcerated. It does terrible things to the members of the family that are outside. But what I would expect, and we have not seen, is 1 ounce of contrition from this man who held the highest office in our state and used it in a way that is shameful and that, as a consequence of his prosecution and conviction by a jury of his peers, still has no capacity for acceptance of responsibility.
She said it better than I said it, but I agree 100%. Mm-hmm. Let's check in with Lauren Lapkin, and then we'll get to the 4, 3, 2, and 1.
For News at 10, watch WGN, Mike Mater, Joe Donlan, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV News at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN. Did you like the dramatic ending?
I thought that was absolutely incredible, Kevin.
Thanks,
Powell.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sounded like one of those the Super Bowl announcers. Ladies and gentlemen.
She's doing a very nice job over there.
Good job.
These young kids.
Professionals. The two of them are professionals, Kevin and Lauren.
Yeah. All right, let's continue on to the top five. Here we go.
Number 4.
Chicago Police Superintendent, Interim Superintendent Charlie Beck, And Alderman Matt O'Shea joined Bob Surratt this morning to talk about a variety of things. But one issue that has been grabbing a lot of headlines is the rising crime on the CTA. Here's what Charlie Beck said needs to be done to stop this surge.
You know, right now we're making sure that that not only the officers assigned to CTA are all in uniform, they're all present, they're all riding the train, and then we're making sure that the district officers, the officers assigned to the neighborhoods in Chicago, spend time on the platform. And by spending time on the platform, you know, they keep order, they make sure that the right people are on the train and the wrong people aren't. We just had a gun recovered off the platform last night. You know, I think that presence is key. So we're going to increase the presence, and then we have some technology things we're going to put in place, and we'll talk about that later this week.
Okay. All right. Okay. They get it. Another thing they need to do is when they arrest a guy, keep him in jail.
Keep him in jail there.
Yeah. I really like the idea of that. And I did notice, as we were speaking to the sheriff of the County of Cook, Tom Dart, an hour ago, that he agrees with me on mm-hmm. that, and he's responsible for them. That's his job. And he's like, yes, we should be keeping, because there's a guy, I got to mention this one more time. This is just absolutely crazy. A guy, a year and a half ago, shot a police officer in the back. He was saved solely by his bulletproof vest. The guy who shot him, who has been charged with attempted murder of a police officer and all kinds of other aggravating counts with weapons and all the rest of the stuff, has been sent home on home monitoring. Now, how in the hell does that happen?
That's insane.
He got, because he was able to post, he was able to come up with his family, somebody came up with $5,000 to pop him out and to get him home monitoring.
Yeah, a couple of zeros missing from that.
Yeah.
$5,000. That's insane.
Yeah, that is absolutely insane. All right, continuing on.
Number three.
Grandpa Rossi. You know, he's the Cubs general manager or the Cubs field manager now. I keep forgetting that happened. I keep whenever yeah. I hear his name pop yeah. up, I think, well, what's he doing now?
Why is Joe Maddon always in California now? What's he doing? Maybe
he was a spring training. He says although his friends with a lot of players who were his former teammates, he feels very confident that he's going to be able to draw a line needed to be their boss. Now he's the manager. Don't forget that. He's also not worried about Chris Bryant, who seems to there seems to be some little bit of tension between the Cubs organization and their third baseman.
Oh, I've had conversations with Chris. You know, I think Chris is in a position that, you know, he's standing up for his rights. He has the right to do that. I think that's a positive thing for him and the industry. I was a player once as well, and when a guy like Chris Bryant stands up and fights for the rights that they believe in as a player, I think that's a powerful thing. You know, he's talked to Theo. He doesn't hold any grudges. You know, it's just part of it, and he understands the business side. If anybody understands it, it's Chris and all he's been through in his career. So he's a powerful young man. I've seen him deal with a lot of adversity coming up as this superstar, dealing with that early on, winning Rookie of the Year, winning MVP, dealing with some injuries, expectations. This guy's risen to the occasion every time. I don't have to worry about Chris Bryant when it comes to dealing with outside stuff.
That's a great answer, by the way. I got to say, you know what?
A good answer.
Grandpa Rossi, good for you. This is probably the first of the tough questions he's going to get. Mm-hmm. And he explained it perfectly. And I like when he goes, I used to be a player. Yeah, we remember, like an hour ago.
And I was on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we got you.
Listen, I just want to see the puzzle all fall into place for a couple of years from now. Chris Bryant is a White Sox because he's not appreciated by his family on the North Side.
Very interesting.
He's like that great boyfriend that the girlfriend always just abuses anyway. And just mistreats and cheats on. No matter what he does, he can't please them.
What are you going to tell Yoan Moncada, though?
Well, Chris Bryant can play all nine positions plus DH.
Okay. All right. Look at me defending the White Sox. All right. Checking in at, yes, indeed, at, don't tell me.
Number two.
Justin Bieber joined James Corden for his first appearance in 4 years on the Late Late Show. Carpool karaoke. Oh. The two debated who would win a fight between the Biebs and Tom Cruise.
You wouldn't want to. No. I'm dangerous.
Yeah,
my agility is crazy. My agility is insane.
He literally does movies called Mission Impossible. The mission is impossible, and he makes it possible.
He's an actor.
He jumps out of planes and stuff,
dude. I don't think you understand the mind control that I have. My mind control is another specimen. I'm different.
Listen.
I'm the Conor McGregor of entertainment. That's just a fact.
Oh, that is almost too accurate in so many ways. You don't really want to be.
Yeah. You know. Conor McGregor, not exactly the example you want to set for anything. Not,
well, they have the tail of the tape about the same number of incidents, controversies, arrests, you know, it's caught on tape, bad behavior, about the same.
You know, now Bieber, a couple weeks ago, he was on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And he was sporting a porn stash.
Oh.
He looks like he crawled out of a garbage these days.
Oh.
Like, I don't know what it is. He just all of a sudden is like, I don't care about anything.
Well, you know, you get married. You stop, you know, hey, listen, when you catch the bus, you stop running, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that what he did?
Well, yeah.
Right?
But then there's a stop you have to get off on because you stop trying. He's a good athlete, though, but Tom Cruise would crush him. Even though Tom Cruise has got 25 years on him, I think.
I
think he'd crush him.
I don't know. I think he's wiry. Why are we having this conversation? I
mean, well, didn't he challenge him on Twitter months ago?
Exactly,
remember that?
Yeah. I mean, Tom Cruise, they literally had a shut down production of one of those movies because he broke his ankle jumping from a building to building. Justin Bieber peed in a janitor's bucket. That's his big stunt work, okay? I'm just saying.
Lauren, who wins that?
Probably Tom Cruise.
Okay.
Taylor Swift versus Bieber. Who wins?
Probably Taylor Swift.
I think so, too.
All right. Okay. And finally.
Number one.
Back to Rob Blagojevich. This morning, he stood in front of his home. That home we've gotten to know so well, right? Because I'd forgotten about it. It's got the two like ramps that go up to the front door.
Yeah.
Right,
nice,
on either
nice
side.
Platform for to greet the media.
And I remember, was it on one of the newscasts last night, somebody said, Rob Blagojevich's mansion on the northwest side of the city.
Okay.
It's a corner house. It's nice. It's real nice. That's it. But it's not.
He's not Ed Burke, for crying out loud.
No, exactly. I mean, if he had actually sold the Senate seat, he could have bought a mansion, but he didn't get it. It didn't work it out. But he said that he was not doing this, didn't do the public life for the money.
I got into politics to help people. I didn't get into politics to make money. I didn't get into politics to enrich my family or my friends. I got into politics because I was fortunate to live in the greatest country that's ever existed.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Rokan Show Mighty Art Players have put together a little montage of some of the things that Rob Blagojevich said in 2008 and early 2009. No, 2008. It was actually November 2008. On the phone discussing, the Senate seat.
Yeah, we got the message. Grateful and appreciative, huh? I think a 501c4. Can we get his friend Warren Buffett or some of those guys to help us on something like that?
What, for you?
Yeah. Do they think that I would just appoint Valerie Jarrett for nothing? Just to make him happy?
Hey, senators make $169,300.
So more than what I make. 169, huh?
Yeah, 169.3.
But, you know, what about Patty on some, you know, corporate boards? Paid corporate boards right now. Can they help us that way? Treehouse Foods, the one that, what's her name, was on for $65,000. Now, can't we get Patty a couple of those? But if they feel like they can do this and not give me anything, under just some vague assurances or something, then I'll go Jesse Jr. I mean, the arrogance of these people. Yeah, what have I gotten for? Oh, the people are going to be mad and the newspapers, they'll all of you.
It must be remembered here that the whole Senate seat piece was the tipping point which resulted in the immediate arrest of Rob Blagojevich. It wasn't the centerpiece of the criminal case against him. The feds had already amassed tapes of him discussing ways in which he was going to suppress the payment of Medicaid payments to Children's Memorial Hospital, of ways that he was also going to defraud and defraud the people of the state of Illinois. And so this was the end point. And the important thing that must be remembered is they took them into, they heard these conversations over just a couple of days in November of 2008 after Barack Obama had won and was leaving. And what was the Senate seat going to be? And they arrested him in December of 2008 because they did not want him to name a senator to the United States Senate who would then be an illegitimate senator. That is what happened there. All right. We've got to take a quick time out. And then we will have the news. I'm sorry I'm a few minutes behind here because, well, that was my fault. Didn't look. Thank you, Orion. Richard Roper is in the studio with us because coming up after the top of the hour news, about 15 minutes, 17 minutes, 20 minutes from now, I'm just rounding down.
Good job.
Harrison Ford. The Harrison Ford sat down with Richard Roper, and we're going to play that for him because it's very interesting. Harrison Ford's got a new film out.
The Call of the Wild.
In which he's called into the wild?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And he interacts with a 140-pound dog, who may or may not be an actual dog or the magic of movies.
And this movie is coming out. He's doing a lot of... He's out there promoting.
He's on with the Ellen DeGeneres.
So, and it's just now, I read in Robert Feeder's column in the Daily Herald that... The radio station he started at, he was the first voice on a high school radio station here.
Maine Township, class of 1960, right. Harrison Ford was, but this was in 59.
Yes.
They went on the air, where they turned the signal on, I guess.
And so he remembers that. There's all kinds of things that happen in this, because he's Chicago's very own. People forget that.
Yeah, Chicago born, and then, of course, grew up in Park Ridge and still feels like, you know, calls Chicago home. And one of the reasons we had to pre-record this is because we had to hit the dump button a couple of times because Harrison was in a very chatty mood. And then he gets comfortable, and then all of a sudden, in the immortal words of Kramer, he lets the expletives fly.
Yeah. I think you
in
get
a good way, though, not at me.
Right. I think you get that. I'm glad you cleaned that up. Yeah. There's something about Harrison Ford too. You get to a certain level of being a star, you just don't give a damn about anything.
Absolutely,
right?
True.
He's done everything he could possibly do. He's been Indiana Jones. He's Han Solo.
Yeah,
right. That's it.
Dr. Richard Kimball, for crying out loud, in between all that.
And every 5 minutes he crashes his airplane, and he doesn't even care about that.
Just expands the land he has in Wyoming, so he's got a bigger landing strip.
And he's married to Calista Flockhart.
Yeah, for quite a while now. They're usually off the radar. He's better at doing press than he was 20, 30 years ago. I mean, I talked to him when he was promoting Presumed Innocent. Remember that one?
Wow.
Scott Turow book turned into a great legal thriller. That was in 1990.
You're going to hear from Harrison Ford coming up after 6 o'clock. You're going to hear from Chuck Gowdy coming up in just a few minutes. He's going to join us to talk about how he got to sit next to Blagojevich on the ride home from prison last night.
Kind of a Han Solo himself.
Yes,
Chuck Gowdy.
I think so. He goes into the Hall of Fame right now, as far as I'm concerned. But first, let's talk to Lauren Lapka. She'll one day be in the Hall of Fame. She's got the traffic and the weather. All right, so this is one of those stories that... people will remember where they were when Rob Blagojevich came home from prison 6 years early. And it happened last night, and it was a television spectacle last night because it was late morning that we found out that Rob Blagojevich was going to be released from prison, was commuted, and then he did get commuted, and everybody had to figure out how in the hell they were going to get there. And so a number of television reporters and crews got on planes and got to Denver. The guy who has won the lottery, and I cannot decide this, Chuck Gowdy, if you are just the greatest ever or lucky, but you don't have to tell us the answer to that. I don't want to know.
There's a fine line between those two, as you know.
There is there's a very fine line that you, not only did you get there, you got to Denver and you got to, you know, was going up to the counter and he's trying to, you know, get a ticket, which a lot of people are asking this question. I hate to sound like the president, but a lot of people are asking this question. How did he get a ticket? What ID does he have to get on the airplane? Do we know?
We do. He actually told me that his prison ID that he had planned to use was stolen earlier in the day by an inmate who was going to sell it, I guess, on eBay.
Okay.
And so he didn't have an ID. And the guy who came to pick him up ended up bringing his old wallet, and there was an old Illinois driver's license in there, and they managed to talk their way through TSA and get him on the plane.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty clear who he is. But that's, oh, that's very interesting. That's very interesting. Okay. So so you then, you're on the same flight going back, and it turns out you're sitting right next to him. Chuck, how'd that happen?
You know, it's quite a coincidence of air travel, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I don't believe in coincidences, Chuck Gowdy. I just don't. All right, so
you believe in conspiracies. I know that.
Yeah. So I just don't. And when it comes to Illinois politics and Chicago and the way that things happen here, there are very few coincidences. All right. So let's talk about where we are today. He's been out talking to members of the press. He obviously had his press conference, so that it was. He wasn't really taking questions today. He just got up and made his speech. No contrition. Are you surprised by that?
Well, I'm a little bit surprised only because he has nothing to lose at this point by being contrite and showing a little bit of remorse. And the only remorse that he has shown is for what his family had to go through. And he's shown that in the past. I mean, he came out with both barrels going last night and today.
Yeah,
aimed right at federal prosecutors and the criminal justice system. I mean, he teed this thing up in ways that he really hadn't before, calling himself a political prisoner, the victim of a persecution. I mean, he invoked Martin Luther King's name and Winston Churchill and Joseph from the Bible. I mean, he went deeper than he has before in some of these analogies.
Yeah. Yeah, and he does seem to be wrapping himself in a certain religiosity that we didn't really see on display a lot when he was governor. And throughout the day, we have been contrasting what he said this morning at 11:30 in front of his house with what was on those tapes that the FBI played in court. And those are two very, very different sounding individuals right there. And that's not to be unexpected. I mean, people are, you know, when they don't think anybody else is listening, they tend to sound a little different. But it's just so stark to me because whether or not you were worried about the selling of the Senate seat, because at the end of the day, that was the one charge or that was in the series of charges that was diminished by the appeals process because part of it was considered to be log rolling, which is a term I had never heard until that came out in that decision. And that it was just sort of a tit for tat, quid pro quo politically, but not for personal benefit. But in those tapes, it's really clear he was asking for board positions where sort of a no-show board positions for his wife at $40,000 or $50,000 a piece for that. And it seemed very clear. And then the thing about the children's hospital is to me unforgivable, but people.
So what's happening is, you know, this two-pronged effort by Blagojevich. One is to continue hammering that he was sentenced for too long and in jail for too long. And the other thing is the face of the conviction itself. He's essentially now revising history to make those convictions go away in the court of public opinion, right, that he did nothing wrong.
Right, right, exactly. And that's very popular. I mean, he certainly must have had a TV while he was in the joint because he certainly has learned a little something about reframing things. The president's very good at that as well. All right, I want to get back to the airplane before we let you go, because I know you
sure.
got to run to the top of the news here at 6 o'clock. So it's a 2-hour and 15-minute gate to gate kind of moment there. So you get in you get in the airplane, you sit down, there's Blago sitting next to him. There you go. You got the pictures going, you got the whole deal. There was a bunch of other reporters and crews on that plane as well. But you get the prime seat. What did you talk about for 2 hours and 15 minutes?
Well, I started by saying, you know, isn't it interesting how things have come full circle? Because the last time I saw him, we had the same seating arrangement when we flew to Denver with him when he reported for prison. So this was a little bit deja vu all over again, as we like to say.
Yeah.
The first thing we talked about was, you know, what prison was like for him and how he managed to survive and why he wasn't ordering a cocktail on board and only drank cranberry apple juice. And he said that if he took a drink after not having alcohol for 8 years, there'd be quite a story in his behavior on the plane.
Well, this guy's put his head through the cockpit door. Yeah. I appreciate that.
You've talked to him enough times to know. You pretty much can ask one question and 2.5 hours is up.
It's true. That's true. If he starts talking about himself, it's all good. I just wonder, now that he's back, what is going to happen to him as a professional. I mean, it seems to me he's going to be jumping headfirst into the political waters here and the takeover of the Republican Party by the Trump Party. You know, that's become that's got as much energy as any political movement I have ever seen in my entire life in this country. It's not a majority, but it's powerful.
His handler through all of this, who kind of facilitated the whole move by President Trump today, told us that Blagojevich was doing targeted interviews today. He did a couple of interviews, including one with us. Targeted interviews, meaning targeted audiences. And there was no explanation what the targeting was all about, why they were doing this, but clearly something is up. And I think it will play out over the coming weeks.
He does. He certainly does appear to be making a plea to the African American community here about justice reform. Very big issue in the African American community, and I understand it. And I understand why. But he seems to be saying, hey, listen, I'm going to be your guy. I've been through this. I've been wrongly accused and I've been wrongly prosecuted, and I'm going to help you. And we're going to fight for all of this together. And I think he sees that as his comeback. He theoretically could run for Congress. I don't know that wouldn't be challenged in court, but he could theoretically do that, especially if he gets a pardon, which he does not have yet. We must be clear. All right, Chuck Gowdy's got to get to work at ABC 7. I'll see him after 6 o'clock. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Okay, Ro. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. All right. Wow. What a 36 hours this has been. Because turn around and you look at what I completely assumed was going to be a sort of a, I don't know, beaten down. I don't know that Rod Blagojevich should ever be beaten down, but because he's got a lot, speaking of energy, he's got a ton of it. And he's certainly capable of telling a story and spinning a yarn. He's incredibly talented at that, whether it's in politics or even in broadcasting. He's very good at doing all of those things. The question, though, is, you know, where is the truth in all of this? And a lot of the things that he's telling people, we just heard a little bit of the interview that he did with Fox 32, and he's sort of, not just recasting himself, but recasting the federal government and the prosecutors and the FBI and all that in exactly the same way that you are hearing the president recast that. And I am suspicious that there is, you know, I don't believe in non-conspiracies. I think that there may be something afoot here along those lines, and he may end up having an active role in some of the other things that may be coming forward here with the upcoming election. I don't know if you're familiar, but there is an election coming up in November. And the president is basically unopposed. And he's going to be the nominee without question of the Republican Party. Democrats can't figure themselves out. They probably won't have a nominee until July. And this is a good vacuum, a good opportunity for a guy with the talent that Rod Blagojevich has to, you know, possibly reestablish himself, if not on the political stage, at least on the pundit stage, and to be a dynamic player in all of that. And he is going to be on the Fox News channel as well, as we understand it this evening. So, well, let the games begin, as we like to say. All right, coming up, Harrison Ford sits down with Richard Roper after the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in 2 minutes.
Wake up with the best spring break travel deals, the worst airline food, and what to do about that coach seat reclining in your face. Wake up with us.
Bob Surratt, Radio Chicago, WGN.
Rokon Show right here, 720 WGN. Richard Roper's in the studio with us. Richard Roper, of course, is the chief film critic for the Chicago Sun-Times and chief film critic of the Rokon Show. Unpaid position.
Go Chiefs! Little Mahomes in there, too.
You sat down with Harrison Ford, and we're going to play that interview for you coming up in a few minutes for, not you, because you already did the interview, but for you out there. Mm. And Harrison Ford is now in his 70s,
mm-hmm,
and is among the greatest stars, top five, top three greatest stars of the last half century.
Absolutely. When you go back, of course, he had a few small roles, but his first noticeable role was in American Graffiti, which put him on the George Lucas radar to play Han Solo. than Indiana Jones. And you could still argue that that's the 1-2 punch. That's the biggest 1-2 punch of characters ever in terms of commercial success, pop culture impact, to play Han Solo and Indiana Jones.
A lot of
incredible
action figures sold for both of those.
Yeah. And then a lot of other great movies, you know, including maybe his best movie of all, Witness, and the great, we mentioned The Fugitive, the Andy Davis film that was shot right here in Chicago, one of his best roles. So just for people who don't know, too, because we're talking about The Call of the Wild, you know, because this story goes all the way back. Jack London, it was one of those short books that you had to read in school if you were a student in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s and 70s. I don't know if it's still as popular. It's actually, it is a great story, but it's been turned into movies and TV shows. Clark Gable was in a version of it once, Charlton Heston. It is the story mainly of a sled dog named Buck during the gold rush in the Klondike of the 1890s, this giant 140-pound dog. And Harrison Ford plays John Thornton, who's the crusty old reclusive prospector. And in this movie, it's a little bit of a different character, but he eventually crosses paths with Buck. So that's what this movie is. It is a family film for folks. We're going to give it a full review tomorrow. But that's why you've seen Harrison Ford doing some interviews and why he sat down. I actually stood up with him because everybody always says, I had the chance to sit down with whoever the star is. And I said, I scheduled the opportunity to stand up.
Yeah, I will say this. He's a reluctant guy. And he is not the happiest person to do press, right? He's not one of those guys who loves to go out and do it. There are other Will Ferrell, I think, really gets a kick out of it.
He's not one for tomfoolery.
Or
suffering fools. And but he's always been that way.
But he's always sought you out for these interviews.
We've always, you know, I think it goes all the way back to, you know, Siskel and Ebert were, you know, very good to him and knew him back in the day. And I've talked to him going all the way back, you know, 30 years now. I think he's always appreciated, you know, people who are interested in the film mm-hmm. and the process of the acting and not so much the personal life and the wackiness. He lives in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. That's by design. He has almost never gone to any of the Academy Awards ceremonies or Golden Globes, whether his hat had a film or a role that was up for it or not. Not because he thinks he's better than that. He's just not interested in it. It's just not his thing. He's a carpenter who became an actor. Mm-hmm. And he once, a few years ago, he did go to Comic-Con, and he was baffled. Because he had now really no knowledge of how huge it was, and he was like, what is even happening? He wasn't putting it down. He just still didn't realize the magnitude of all of that stuff in the DC universe. And even though this movie has some special effects, the dog itself is a CGI creation because you just couldn't do this film with real dogs the way it's shot. But he does have a lot of interesting things to say about these modern day films. And sometimes the overload of special effects in lieu of story.
Yeah. Well, all right, and that's coming up in this interview that we're going to play for you. One of the things about Harrison Ford that's so different in this era, because you had guys like De Niro and Pacino, and there were sort of urban actors, you know, and it was cityscapes that they were always playing in or against, and modernity. Harrison Ford is a throwback to great Western characters because he's a reluctant cowboy type.
Yeah, that's a perfect description, Ron. In fact, you know, I mentioned Clark Gable. Gary Cooper, I think, is probably the best example from High Noon back in the day. And we talk about these two roles. Indiana Jones, obviously a historical character, but, you know, fictional, but essentially he's an archaeologist, but he's essentially a cowboy, you know,
right.
I mean, he's, you know, and an adventurer. And then Han Solo, and even though that's actually not set in the future, it's set a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But that's a space western. George Lucas said that from the start. So in both cases, he's playing, you know, the rogue cowboy character, and perfectly suited for that. And he's often played cops and lawyers and you know, authority figures.
He was Jack Ryan.
Jack Ryan.
Which is, you know, one of the great characters of the last 30 years that's been written.
And listen, and he was, you know, I wish he'd run for president right now, because remember on Air Force One in that movie, get off my plane! spoiler alert, kick Gary Oldman right off the plane!
All right, Lauren Lapka's got the traffic and the weather. Then you'll hear this interview with Harrison Ford.
This is the Rokan Show. I'm Richard Roper. And this Friday, Harrison Ford stars in the latest movie version of The Call of the Wild, very famous story by Jack London from 1903. It's actually set in the 1890s Klondike Gold Rush. And I had the chance just the other night to have a conversation with Mr. Ford.
Mr. Ford, good to talk to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Let's just jump right into it. I want to talk to you, obviously, you know, The Call of the Wild, Harrison, they've been, you know, ever since Hal Roach and then Clark Gable and Charlton Heston, they've been making movies about this forever. What was it about this treatment of the story that drew you to this project?
I didn't actually see the other iterations
I read the book when I was in high school, as all of us did. Mm-hmm. I found the book to be powerful and really interesting, especially as a city boy growing up in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it sort of stretched my Ken and my Barbie, too. But that's another story. But I didn't see the movies. And when it came along as a script, I read it. I felt that there was powerful potential in it. I knew that it was going to be CGI. I knew that the dogs were not going to be available on the day. But the one thing I wanted to develop further was the history of John Thornton. Mm. Because in the book he sees Deus Ex Machina. You know, he's the machinery of God at work. He arrives just in time to save Buck. And we don't know where he comes from. His only utility is to attend to the Buck story. But I thought it would be more emotionally powerful to develop a context in which each character led the other to their destiny, as it were. And so we explored options for the story for John Thornton and came up with the character that's in the film. I thought that was a really interesting exercise for me professionally to get in, you know, involved with this story and to work on shaping a character. And I'm always looking for something different to what I've lately done. And I've always had an interest in family films. They've been really important to my career because they're passed on from generation to generation. I'm introduced to new generations. I don't know that I need another introduction to another generation at this point in my life. They might outlast me, but they will outlast me. But, you know, that's been of great benefit. So I enjoy making family films. The other character in the film that's of great interest to me is nature. Mm-hmm. And the place, the powerful, dramatic context in which this exists, in which the presence of nature is palpable. Even though it's expressed, created in computers, I mean the movie is beautiful to look at, and the capacity to get into the mind of a dog, to get so close to a dog that you're right in his eyes when he's running, when the dog sled is escaping from the avalanche. You can't get a camera there, but you could give it visual articulation. If you could imagine it, you can do it. And that's kind of interesting.
The visuals are incredible, as you mentioned here. I mean, even knowing going into this that we're looking at, you know, sets and visual effects that were not in the Yukon, but I mean, it's seamless. And I think you bring up an interesting aspect of this, because even though this is set obviously in the Yukon of the 1890s, there's so much relatable here about respecting the environment. And I love when your character, when John Thornton is telling Buck, like, this land, you know, our ancestors were here long before we were. And there's that oneness with the environment. It's a beautiful message in the film.
Yeah. And the other thing, one of the dangers, which I think we avoided with CGI, is that it often leads to, with a keystroke, multiplying the enemy, multiplying the good guys, you know, creating spectacle. But when you take full advantage of CGI and its capacity to create beyond human imagination, you lose human scale. That's something you always have to keep, is human scale, so that people can feel physical context.
Do you think that's something that gets lost with some of these huge budget movies these days, when there's so much?
I see it over and over again, man. You know, there's too many fucking airplanes in the sky in a dogfight. There's too many, you know, bad guys coming over the ridge. And you just lose anything within your experience that you can relate to. And you say, oh, they did this in the computer. That didn't happen in this movie. And I think that's a testament to the director and the filmmakers.
Yeah, I think seeing everything when it feels like I'm more visiting a video game than getting immersed in a fully immersive experience.
Exactly.
We are talking to Harrison Ford. You may have heard of him. He's done a few movies over the years. His latest film is The Call of the Wild.
You mentioned that when you saw the script, it was already decided that Buck was going to be CGI, that that was the way to do this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because it was doable. The movie is expensive to make, but trying to make this movie... imagined the way this movie,
like a dog.
He was able to participate in scenes as the dog, just to give a reference to the animation, and he was spectacular. And when I was relating to him, he was playing Buck for me. Buck doesn't talk, he just listens. And so I had somebody to talk to, and I know that I was talking to a consciousness.
Wow.
The intimacy of this character's experience with the dog is emotionally powerful.
You know, I think the narration is really a key component as well. And I know you've had, you know, different experiences with the narration, because at first it feels like we're just getting Buck's story, but then it, you know, becomes as much your story as well. And I think that was a real key component in tying those two together and giving the film, if anything, more emotional heft than the book even had.
Yeah, I was very gratified, Ben. We worked tirelessly on the narration because it was an easy thing to change and continue to polish and refine. And some of that dialogue comes from the book, but some of it is not in the book. And it's archaic language. Actually, the language of the book is very different than contemporary speech.
With all the talk we have in here about the CGI and everything, you've got a character who at times is almost paralyzed by his grief, but other times there's a lot of physicality here. There's climbing and running, and I don't think they can yet CGI freezing cold water, so this still had to be kind of a physically challenging role for you as well.
Nah, it was a piece of cake, man. It was fun. There was nothing in it that was daunting or that difficult. It was all, you know, pretty common stuff. I've spent many hours in canoes, and but I wasn't in a canoe. I was in a prop canoe on a gimbal, being manipulated by a couple of grips shaking me around. And then the real art is in taking that element, photographing that element, and then putting it into another computer-generated environment and matching the weight of the water to the weight shifts that I was making in the canoe. All of that stuff, that's the fun of this game for me, all that kind of stuff.
And is it still fun, the game, after all this time? Is it still fun? Yeah, you can kind of pick and choose at this point, right?
Well, you know, they pick and choose too. Yeah. Well, you know, they pick and choose too.
Yeah.
But I'm in it for the fun of it. I'm in it for the emotional exercise and the fun of being around creative people and struggling with creative problems.
One last thing I wanted to mention to you in case you hadn't heard, you know, your old Maine Township High School is celebrating their 60th year of the radio station. Do you know who the first student voice heard on that station was?
No.
It was you.
Was it really?
It was you, my friend, December 1959. So congratulations on that.
God Almighty, that was long ago in a world far, far away. But it's good to hear. Thank you very much. I enjoyed talking to you, man.
Great talking to you, Harrison. Take care now.
You take care. All the best. Bye.